Wake up, America.
Wake up, America.
Wake up, America. It's time for Michael Dean After Dark. I'm your host, Michael Dean, Freedom Fiend, and this is the Late Night Feisty Liberty Show. We have a rotating stable of interesting insomniac co-hosts. Plus, we leave the phone lines open. So if the hamster in your brain is keeping you up, please call in. Please call in. Don't hold your kitties tight, because it's a warm night here in Wyoming. Their fur will get all over you and get up in your nose and make you sneeze. But I'm not allergic to cats, but I am allergic to government, and so is my co-host, Nikki Darling. How you doing, Nikki?
Hello. Hey. I'm excellent.
Are you allergic to government?
Yes, very much so.
Does it make you break out in hives?
Oh, yeah. I just totally can't breathe.
Yeah, so we're going to break our no tyranny rule. We're actually going to go into something that's very not tyranny today. Later tonight, we're going to talk about how to make your own e-vape nicotine-flavored liquids, which is something Nikki does and something I'm interested in, and it's a good way to work around the man. And, you know, maybe you want to make a few gallons of this stuff before they outlaw it and put it in your windowless bunker for the end days and get a little bit of solar-powered chargers for your vape sticks. But Obama – okay, wait. We got a little – we got a jingle. We could play the jingle, actually, if I could find the jingle. Do you know about the jingle?
No.
You don't know about the jingle? About the look, look what Obama's done to you today.
Oh, yeah, I've heard that.
Yeah, here we go.
Look what Obama's done to you today. Look what Obama's done to you today.
Look what Obama's done to you today. Nikki, show me on the doll where the president touched you. Yeah, so Obama is acting more and more like Hitler. He is, his administration is asking parents to turn in their children if they think they might be terrorists. And the indicator they have for might be terrorists is being resistant to authority and being confrontational. So basically, if your teenager acts like a teenager, turn them into the White House.
Yeah, pretty much.
Yeah, that's square, man.
Well, it's like in schools now, they also want the kids to report their parents if they're drug users, too. I mean,
man, everybody's spying on everybody. That is so square. It is not going to work. It's going to collapse. It's not a sustainable system, man. When you got everybody narking on everybody, everybody ends up in jail, basically, and there's nobody to work and pay taxes to steal from. And it's very similar to how Rome collapsed. Not going into a whole lot of details, but I see similarities. What's that noise, Nikki?
My apologies. It's my little messaging.
Oh.
I'm sorry.
It's your little imaginary friends trying to talk to you?
Yeah, through the computer.
Through the computer? What do you mean? Obama, my children is talking through the computer. I think he's a terrorist. Man.
But schools are about teaching obedience. And I remember when I was in elementary school, I was really upset that I didn't get picked to be a patrol. And pretty much everybody did. But looking back on that, that was the best thing that ever happened to me. Because being a – you know what a patrol is, right? You
wear it sounds like the junior narc squad.
Pretty much. You wear like a little yellow sash with a badge on it. And it says you're a patrol. And you help the kids cross the street. You help the crossing guard. And 2 years in a row, I wasn't allowed to do it for some reason. I don't know. Maybe I was defiant. But it's teaching children obedience and, oh, stop, you can't cross the street now. No, like.
Did they have bathroom monitors in that school? Like bathroom timer kids?
I don't remember.
That's something they have in some kids. That's even creepier because it's like controlling your basic bodily functions, which is something that slave masters like to do. And all of this to me sounds like just training kids to be a part of the state. And they say their Pledge of Allegiance. Now, I probably just lost some listeners. There's probably some listeners who are like, you preach it, Brother Michael. You go, Brother Michael. You say bad things about Obama. I agree with you. And then I said something bad about saying the Pledge of Allegiance. And they probably went, what? But the thing is, the Pledge of Allegiance is a hymn to obey the state no matter what. And just because when you were a kid, your guy may have been in charge of the state doesn't mean you know, doesn't mean it's, you can put an asterisk next to that when someone you don't like Obama, is in charge of the state, because the state is going to have tyrants no matter what. And, you know, if you're of anywhere between Nikki's age and my age, you know, the guy who was in charge that you might have liked when you were a kid was probably either Nixon, Ford, or Reagan. And let's see, should we go through them each? Nixon took us off the gold standard and basically got rid of the gold standard worldwide. Like, America did that and a bunch of countries followed. And that's why there's no real money anymore being used by governments. Yeah. And why your money is like subway tokens and they can print as much as they want and not have it backed by anything. Nixon did that. Nixon stepped up the war on drugs, or really kind of created the organized war on drugs, created the DEA, created the EPA. So anytime you hear, you know, some farmer getting his land taken away because there's an endangered quail on it or turtle, you can thank Nixon. And anytime some gun friend of yours gets arrested for owning guns, you can thank Nixon, because the war on drugs ramped that up. The war on drugs fuels the war on guns. You can't have one without the other. And let's see, who else was in there? Bush one was a horrible man. They were all horrible. Yeah. And then there were some Democrats in there, and they were all horrible too. They're all horrible. They're all tyrants. They all lie and smile when they want your vote. But it's getting to the point where they won't even need your vote anymore.
They'll figure it out how to rig the system.
Maybe they already did. They say that the Diebold machines are totally rigged. Who knows?
Yeah. Well, I've thought about going to vote only to add in somebody like, I don't know, Mickey Mouse or Glenn Danzig or something.
Glenn Danzig. He's probably an inveterate liberal. He lives in Los Feliz, Los Angeles, in that weird little house around the corner from Hillhurst, from the post office, that looks really out of place, man. It's like all these little pink kind of cottagey houses, and then there's his house. It really looks like if I took you walking down that street, Nikki, and said, which one's Glenn Danzig's house? You'd be like, that one. You know, it's okay. It's the one that kind of looks like every day is Halloween and has a black Trans Am parked in front of it.
Nice.
But, you know, he's probably an inveterate liberal. And if he's not, he's probably a conservative like Ted Nugent.
Yeah.
That Ted Nugent, the draft dodger who now goes around getting kudos for going, support the troops. He's a draft dodger who pooed his pants to get out of going to the Vietnam War.
I did not know that.
That's true. He actually bragged about it in there was this rock magazine in the 70s called Crawdaddy, and he did an interview with it. I've seen it. I used to read Crawdaddy. I remember when it happened. I was really young. And he bragged about getting out of going to the Vietnam War by pooing his pants before his physical. And they gave him a mental deferment.
Wow.
There's a lot of right-wingers who were draft dodgers. Rush Limbaugh.
George Bush.
I mean, he kind of was a draft dodger. He was
protected.
Yeah. He was like, you know, mopping toilets in Tennessee during the Vietnam War. He was in the National Guard, or in Texas somewhere. And let's see who else. Rush Limbaugh, Bill O'Reilly was a draft dodger, whole bunch of them, man. And Romney was a draft dodger who extended his Mormon, you know, going and bothering people while they're eating dinner, knocking on the door thing. He did a bunch of those to get out of the Vietnam War. And and while simultaneously protesting, he was a pro-war protester. That's pretty bizarre. Like, he went down where hippies were protesting against the Vietnam War with some guys with signs protesting for the Vietnam War. And there's pictures of that.
Today they would call those people patriots.
Yeah, I don't know, man. I think that patriots need to really wise up and not be patriots. I don't know, man. I think you can be true to the ideals of freedom and self-liberty and self-rule and gun ownership and keeping all your money and not paying lots of taxes to, you know, not think it's a good idea to pay lots of taxes to fund things like government agencies that tell you to turn in your kids. You know, I agree with patriots on all of that stuff.
Yeah.
But the thing is, when they're saying my country right or wrong, you're going to get fooled again, man. You're going to get the wool pulled over your eyes. You're going to believe in some liar with an R after his name who's going to come along and say all the right things and pet the crazy cat spot on your back that makes you lick and makes you purr. And then as soon as that guy's elected, he's going to secretly and slowly or openly and quickly turn into Barack Obama. There's no difference, man.
Yeah, no, there's not. They're all authoritarians.
Yeah, yeah.
And I don't want to be told what to do. No, I don't.
Yeah. Yep. Yep. I don't want to be told. Don't tell me what to do. I don't know you. You don't know me.
I am feisty tonight on that issue.
Yeah, yeah. So I guess we could just stop this level of conversation, this line of questioning, by saying politicians are really square and really stupid and really horrible, and don't believe the hype. You can't believe anyone who says any variation of vote for me and I'll set you free, because just the act of backing some tyrant like that really just makes you a sucker.
Yeah, well, anyone who's attracted to a job like that, I can't trust ever. You've
been to the White House and not as a tourist.
Yep.
Tell me about that.
As a photojournalist, had to just, you know, photograph some press conferences and
Dana Perino
and President Bush lifting off in his helicopter
Airworm One.
David. Yeah. Exactly. Never allowed in the Oval Office or anything. Not that I wanted to go there, but
I'll bet if you'd worked there when Clinton was, you would have been. No, you're too skinny.
No, well, I don't know. I'm a little chubby, so.
I think that he just looked out the door down the hall and said, you, come here. I'm stealing that from some comedian, but I think it's right. He's too busy. He's too busy to go being, you know, trolling bars in Georgetown or anything.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, so Camp David. Let's look up a little bit about Camp David. It's basically like this gorgeous piece of land that the government stole for presidents to go date interns at. I don't know.
It's near Thurmont, Maryland, and I remember a few years ago, or maybe it was last year, they had one of the G8 summits there or something, and a bunch of people said they were going to go protest, and it turned out there were like five people in a corner with signs, and they were like 10 miles away.
Yeah, in the free speech zone. They couldn't get into where the leaders of the free world were drinking owl's blood and running around naked and touching each other in front of a fire. All right, we'll be back. Let's just call this the Freedom Fiends. Let's just do that.
You're listening to Michael Dean After Dark, and yes, we're broadcasting this message into space.
Yeah. This is Michael Dean broadcasting live from Camp David. We're hanging out with Obama here. He's smoking a bunch of hash, but we don't smoke hash, so we're not going to smoke any of his hash. Oh, wait. We're not really at Camp David. We're not really with Obama. Yeah. Besides, he bogarts, man. He steals everyone else's weed when he smokes it with you. He says, I'm taxing this, and takes your hit out of order. Yep. I bet he did. I actually heard he did somewhere that he had a game with his Choom gang, and he had a game where he would grab the joint when it wasn't his turn. And say something like taxing you or something, but it wasn't taxing you. But that sounds about right. So Porkfest, the schedule is up. You've been to Porkfest, right, Nikki?
Oh, yes. It's awesome.
I've never been. My wife DJ and I are going. Really excited. We got tickets. I'm speaking there. Tell me about Porkfest. Tell our listeners about Porkfest. I know about Porkfest, but...
Well, Porkfest, a lot of people think it's like a festival of eating pigs, yes, but it's not. It's short for the Porcupine Freedom Festival. It takes place in Lancaster, New Hampshire. Every summer, I'm not going to tell you exactly where.
Why?
It's
a matter of public record. It's Lancaster.
I know. People can go look it up if they're not too lazy. For the campground name, because you know, every year we have our doubts about like things flying overhead or people in the crowd. But Porkfest is a very fun camping event. It's for the family as well. There's a part of the campground that's just for family, and there's lots of family activities as well. This year, I think they're going to be concentrating on DIY, like all kinds of things like canning and cleaning your guns and stuff like that, and things that are useful.
DIY gun cleaning is one of the things?
No, I don't know. I was
thinking, like, are there people who send their guns out to be dry cleaned?
No, like teaching you how to maybe take apart your gun, which everyone should know if they own one.
I think the only people who don't clean their own guns are like rich people and presidents who like hand it to Jeeves the butler after they shoot the pheasant and when it's released in their living room. Yeah,
exactly.
Yeah.
So it's a fun event. There's lots of food. There's lots of agorism, which is great. You come, you pay for a campsite, and you set up whatever you want to sell. Only I hear this year there's no alcohol sales because the campground officially got a liquor license or something. And we, you know, the partnership between the Free State Project and Pork, the campground, Rogers Campground, they're very respectful of each other. So they've told everyone coming not to sell alcohol,
yep,
which is great because we respect private property.
Yep. And there's all sorts of cool events happening. There's, I mean, a lot of it is just people hanging out and meeting each other. And, you know, I'm going to be meeting a bunch of people in person that I consider really good friends, like Nikki. I've never met Nikki. I've never met Ben Stone, the Bad Quaker. I've never met any of the hosts that I do shows with except for Nima Vidati. So let's see. What else we got? Merengue dance lessons.
Really?
Making s'mores. Kids movie night. Sovereign living. Hiking for kids. How to explain to faith-based groups that Jesus was a libertarian. how libertarians work in mental health care today.
That's interesting.
Yoga with Stephanie Murphy. Ballroom dance. Buzz's big gay dance party. Brunch fest setup, marshmallow shooters, hustle dancing class, front yard farming ideas, tie-dye for age 12 to 17, putting gratitude into your revolution for libertarianism, living your philosophy, seed saving for dummies. That sounds
nice.
Good. Trivia, big goth dance party. And I'm putting on a couple things myself. I am doing on Tuesday night at the Children's Barn. This is kind of interesting. Right after the children's movie night is over at 9 p.m., from 9 to midnight, I'm showing my film DIY or Die, How to Survive as an Independent Artist, and then doing a Q&A on digital audio, podcasting, radio production, how to get caviar sound on a cat food budget. And then Thursday, I'm showing another movie I made from 9 to midnight and doing a Q&A. The movie's called Guns and Weed, The Road to Freedom. I made with Nima Vidati about 3 or 4 years ago. And then I'm doing a Q&A on DIY, low budget, no budget filmmaking and activism. Yeah.
Nice. That's going to be great. And I finally watched your DIY movie.
Oh, cool. You like it?
Yeah, it was great. Yeah, I watched it on the YouTubes.
On the YouTubes. Yep. It used to be on Netflix and Hulu. I don't know. I think it's still on Netflix as DVD only, but I don't know. Yeah. So there's another interesting event happening there called Let's Talk About Abortion. And this was my idea. I'm not involved in it, but it's some libertarians who are pro-choice and pro-life having a spirited debate. Now, the reason I suggested doing this was it's pretty much the only topic that not all real libertarians agree on, and they have their arguments for it. But they used a really bizarre picture that looks really tasteless for this. Looks like a doctor serving up soup or something, and I can't believe they did that. But I'm not harmed. I'm just like, wow, really? Porkfest trolled Facebook.
You're listening to Michael Dean After Dark, and I'm beaming these words into your cerebellum.
Good evening, cool cats and kitty fluffers. This is Michael Dean. It's After Dark. So it's time for Michael Dean After Dark. So, Nikki.
Yes.
You're going to tell us about the vapes. Now, what are you vaping on? Just tell us what vaping is for people who don't know.
Okay, well, vaping is short for like using a personal vaporizer, which many people think you use illegal substances in, but you don't actually. It's
Well, you can. They make vaporizers for marijuana, but that's not what we're talking about.
Yeah, exactly. But it stemmed from the electronic cigarette, which are
they were those horrible.
Yeah, those small ones, they're called 808s or 801s or something. Yeah. I don't know. They're not great.
I tried those a few years ago and did them for a little while, but went back to smoking. And now that I'm up to the real vaping, I haven't smoked in a year. I'm still heavily addicted to nicotine. But yeah, I kind of liken it to electronic cigarettes where dial-up and vaping is DSL or cable.
Yeah, definitely. And some of the, they call them mods. They're like, you know, long tubes. Sometimes they come in a box.
Tubes.
Electronics or mechanical. And you can buy your cartridges to put on top that are all ready to go, or you can DIY them yourself and build coils on an atomizer, but that's a lot of geekery right there.
And there's kind of like a macho competitiveness with that too, or like a nerd macho.
Yeah.
There now people who are seriously into vaping to where it's a part of their identity rather than just a constant joy like it is with me. Do those people look down on people who use off-the-shelf equipment?
No, actually. And I was a big part of this community for a long time. Most people don't, maybe a few, but most people are very, very cool. They want people to quit smoking. That's their main goal. And they'll do whatever they can to explain stuff to people. They're like internet shows every weekend where they just give away this stuff like in huge masses to people because they really want people to quit smoking, and it has saved so many people's lives, which is great.
Yeah, you've helped me out with some you helped me out early on with a lot of advice. Yeah. And you gave me some vape stuff and some liquid. Now, what's in the vape liquids?
Okay, well, there's some controversy over that as well, but mainly it's propylene glycol, which is food grade, and it's in a lot of food as a preservative. Vegetable glycerin, which can be used on wounds or can be ingested to make medicine sweeter for children to take. You can buy that on the shelf at Walmart. Candy flavoring, which is usually
so. Wait, there's propylene glycol and glycerin.
Yeah, vegetable glycerin.
Okay, that's what VG is. So it's PG and VG. And
PG and VG.
When you order them online, people take note of what the ratio of PG to VG is, right?
Yeah, but it also depends on, because you have to buy the nicotine liquid, and sometimes that's cut with, you can get it 100% straight, but I wouldn't recommend it. It's highly dangerous if you got it on your skin. So people will get it cut with VG or PG, and I find that when you get it cut with the PG, it's thinner, and then you do your ratios online on a calculator, so and then you add.
You're talking about making your own.
Yeah.
Okay. But before we get into making your own, I want to finish up a little bit on, like, if someone doesn't even want to touch that, but they want to quit smoking or start vaping, how would they do that? Where would you recommend they go? This is not a paid ad, but I just want to hear some expertise here. Where would someone go to get a starter kit and get involved in this?
Oh, man. I don't even know because I haven't bought a starter kit in so long. I do recommend that you Google e-cigarettes, and there's the greatest resource of all is the e-cigarette forums online. It's a huge community full of people. You can start in the newbie section and ask as many questions as you want. But there are so many shops now in every state. Just go to your e-cigarette shop. For the first kit you buy there, it's going to be upcharged, of course, because they have their overhead. But, you know, the people that own these shops usually are so generous with their time. They'll sit there and talk to you about everything.
Yeah. We noticed that, too. When we walked in, it was like there was a line out the door. There was one that opened up in my town. There's not a line out the door anymore now that a second one opened up and people realized they can buy it online. But literally, it was like a 45-minute line to get in. And we were the first time we went in, like they took like 5 minutes with us. You know, they were, which is a long time to take when there's a line 45 minutes behind you. And they were really cool.
Yeah, I think that's awesome. I do recommend, though, never buying the starter kits from a mall kiosk. They upcharge them about 300% and you'll be really ripped off.
Yeah.
But then once you get into it, you can actually order stuff straight from China and you can get it dirt cheap prices.
Now, aren't you worried? Let's put on our minarchist hats for a minute. There's little or no FDA type regulation in China. And occasionally people get poisoned from, you know, toothpaste from China because it has lead in it or something. Is it, in your opinion, a danger to order something you're ingesting into your body directly from China?
One thing I would recommend is never to buy the juice from China. Don't buy the juice from China, but buying the electronics is okay.
Okay.
Batteries are a little iffy, but most of the good batteries are made in Japan, and then China will make knockoffs of them. So I usually get my batteries in state from a reputable business, so that way, you know, if they blow up or something, I can hold the business accountable.
Now, vaping is not only, I mean, I'm not going to make any medical guarantees because there's laws about that, but I will say this. I feel a lot physically better vaping like a madman than I did smoking like a madman.
Oh,
it
totally.
Definitely feels much better for my body. I have more more lung power and more energy for, you know, work and let's just say play. But so the economics of it are better too. I mean, I was smoking about 2 packs of cigarettes a day, and vaping that much nicotine, I'm spending about 2/3 as much probably between vapes and batteries to, you know, liquid and batteries together. Now, if I were to make my own vape, you know, say a pint or a quart at a time with nicotine and flavoring and VG and PG, how much cheaper even still would it be?
Well, the last time I bought all the ingredients I needed, the flavoring, the liquid nicotine, the PG and the VG, I spent $70 and I'll probably get 8 months worth of juice. And I go through about 30 mils of juice every 3 or 4 days.
Wow.
Yeah. So it's a lot.
That's cheaper. Okay. Yeah. Let's put it in terms of if you bought that commercially. So you, for what you're spending on making $70 worth of liquid with nicotine and flavoring and VG and PG, how much would that liquid cost if you bought it on average?
Already made up. At a store, you're looking at $15 for 15 mils. Sometimes it's almost $1 a mil.
So how much is yours per mil?
I don't know. I have not done the math.
Well, let's do the math. All right. Oh, so
I'm so bad at math.
I got this thing on my computer that you put numbers in and it does the math for you. It's
well,
cool.
It gets confusing because the bottle of nicotine I have right here is 250 milliliters, but it's only 6% nicotine solution. So it's only 60 milligrams of nicotine, but then I whittle my juice down to 18 milligrams by diluting it. So it's really confusing.
So how many milligrams of liquid do you make from that bottle?
I couldn't tell you because I haven't kept track. But since I ordered this in January, I don't know, I've probably made about 40 bottles of 30 milliliters already.
Wow.
And I'm only halfway through bottles. The bottle.
Yeah, that's immensely cheaper because 40 30 milliliter bottles, I mean, a 30 milliliter bottle is $10 to $20.
Yeah, even more sometimes for the high quality stuff. Yeah,
I'm going to start making my own. I bought some VG and PG because I decided I was at too high of a nicotine dosage. I was at 24 milligrams and it was just too much. It was my heart could feel it sometimes, and I cut down to my wife had some 12 milligram, half that of the same flavor I liked, my favorite flavor, which is creamy mint from the Plume Room who. Used to be an advertiser on the Fiends, are not anymore, but I'll just say them anyway. We like the Plume Room. They make really good stuff.
But, oh, yeah, they're great.
But, I've gone down to 12 milligrams, and I like it a lot better, but I still have all of this 24 milligram vape liquid. So what I did was I diluted it with VG and PG till it was half as strong, which also makes it half as flavorful, which I don't like as much. So I've actually I'm splitting the difference and making it 18 milligram until I run out of this. And then I'm just going to order or make 12 milligram tasty flavors. Now, where do you go for flavoring and nicotine?
Okay. Well, there's this great company out of Italy actually called The Flavor Apprentice, and then they sell bulk to a whole bunch of different places in the U.S. And then I buy the flavoring from them, and that's where I get all my candy flavorings. But they do have now like tobacco flavors, and my favorite flavor that I use every day, it's a black honey tobacco, and it comes in a small little glass vial, and it's super strong, and I only need half a vial per 30 milliliters. And that's like $2 for the flavoring. But when you're going – and I also can get it at the same place I buy my nicotine liquid. And there you can get everything you need. It's a one-stop shop. And I trust them. They have a really great reputation in the community. A few years ago, there was a big to-do about a company that sold nicotine. And they accidentally screwed up some of their orders. And people were getting like double doses of nicotine. And not they didn't know about it.
Know that instantly, though. I'd be able to tell.
Yeah, I think some people got sick, and this company was quickly just ostracized and taken to the cleaners.
Yeah, and it didn't require the FDA, it didn't require laws or police. It was just the market spoke and spanked them loudly.
Yeah, and when it comes
nobody,
to the vaping...
Nobody died.
Yeah, nobody died. But when it comes to the vaping community, I look at them kind of as their own little council. When anything bad happens in the vaping community, there are people on it broadcasting it day and night.
Yep. Now, you have to take precautions when you're mixing it. Like, you can't have pets in the room, and you should have windows open and things like that, right?
Yeah, and I wear gloves, and...
Do you wear a respirator?
No, but it's liquid. It's kind of hard to inhale it while you're mixing it.
Do you use a blender?
No. I use actually this little plastic beaker that holds 60 milliliters in it. And I bought it from the same place I bought the juice. And I use like a little syringe thing. And I just mix everything up. And then I put them in glass dropper bottles. And then I shake them real well. Most juices have to steep a little bit. So after 2 days, they're great.
Yeah. Because I ordered some kosher vegetable glycerin and some food grade propylene glycol on Amazon. I ran it by you first. You said it was good stuff to get. And I bought I have a quart of each.
Yeah.
But when I went to mix them, they kind of mixed oil and water. I mean, they kind of beat it up, and I had to poured them into a cup and just stir the heck out of them with a fork.
Yep.
But when I ordered them online, Amazon said, people who ordered this also ordered, and they sent me to a bunch of blenders. We'll be back.
You were destined to be listening to this show, Michael Dean After Dark, on this very night. Thank you for arriving.
I am vaping my brains out on a dark and warm night here in Wyoming. It was freezing here a few nights ago, and it's like I got the window open. It's that warm. Nikki, how's the weather where you are on the East Coast in the shadow of Mordor on the Potomac?
It's very spring-like, kind of in the 50s, 60s. It's nice. I like it.
Cool. Yeah. So when I see people vaping, like you posted this thing tonight of this dude vaping in his kitchen with his vape mod and making this dragon-like cloud of vape plume smoke, smoke type stuff. Now, is that just a macho thing, or is there a reason for wanting to have the most vape plume possible?
It's a macho thing, usually done by men in the community, and getting clouds that big can kind of be dangerous, too.
Nicotine-wise, or why?
No, electronics-wise. I mean, you're running the risk of blowing your battery because the coils are all on ohms and battery ampage. And if you don't get that, you know, that whole equation right, you could blow your battery out and it could get really hot in your hand. Which it hasn't really happened yet. There were a few silly incidences where people just didn't do things right because they just didn't take the time to learn. So these people are pros. They know what they're doing.
Don't try this at home, basically.
No.
Yeah. But totally. But also the amount of nicotine stupendously higher in a big plume like that?
No, not at all. Okay. Usually 100% VG, vegetable glycerin juices, will get you a huge cloud if you're building your coils right. Yeah, VG is thicker.
It's kind of like how dragsters will pour bleach on their tires so they can spin out with a big cloud of smoke.
I didn't know that.
Yeah, I think it's bleach.
Oh, you know so many great facts.
Yeah. Well, my wife used to own a pace car with her first husband, and that's a whole nother story that we'll talk about at some time. She's a gearhead. She has an ability not a lot of women have, which is anytime there's any car in a movie and I say, what car is that? She knows the make, model, and year.
Oh, that's pretty cool. You do have a very awesome wife.
I know. You're going to get to meet her. It's pretty cool.
Yeah, I'm so excited.
Yeah. Yay. Yep. She talked to her daughter today, whose name is Nikki, and she told her where we were going and for Porkfest, and you know, like going to New Hampshire for Porkfest, and she's like, going what for where? she's a Hollywood gal. Yeah, it was kind of she got it after DJ explained it, but it was kind of like, you know, and you wanted to talk about families too, so we'll get into that in the second hour, but yeah. You know. Let's finish on the vape thing. What tips do you have in the next couple minutes for people who want to make their own vapes?
Find a reputable company. And by doing that, you really need to reach out and like network with other vapers, especially on the website that I recommended, which is just esigforums.com. Or just Google e-cig forums. And also drink a lot of water when you vape because it will dehydrate you faster. And I've also heard that there might be a correlation between vaping and cavities just because you're vaping so much that it's drying your mouth out, and dry mouth can cause cavities. BG is sweet, but it's not a real sugar. I'm not sure what kind of sugar
it is. It is anhydrous, though. I believe it does suck water out of things.
Yeah, yeah. That's why it's used for wound care, I guess. Mm-hmm. So, I don't know. I like vaping because, you know, people will gain weight after they quit smoking. Well, if you switch to vaping, you're not going to eat yourself crazy because you can vape all kinds of yummy flavors that taste just like dessert. So, I think it's great for that. I wouldn't suggest anybody who's never smoked actually start vaping, but I did know one person that... She never vaped, but she started vaping zero nicotine liquid, and I was like, okay, that's cool, whatever. She just wanted to be part of the crowd. So.
Yeah, that's kind of weird, but you know, I don't think there should be a law against it. I don't think there should be a law against anything except murder, theft, fraud, and aggression. But that's just me. I'm weird.
Yeah, and when I first tried to quit smoking, they put me on that medicine.
Vantrax or something. Yeah, it's like it makes
something
people,
like that.
Like one of the side effects is like death or jumping out windows.
Suicide, yeah. And I used to drive across the Key Bridge in D.C. like every day. And like for a week straight, I was just like, I'm going to get out in traffic and jump off the bridge.
You're listening to Michael Dean After Dark. Go to michaelwdean.com. That's michaelwdean.com.
Good evening, my fellow
worms. I know some things.
I'll be back with more later on.
I'm never satisfied.
This is Michael Dean After Dark.
The stato sperimentato.
We have an avancement.
Look and roll over.
Pessimism. The United States government presents
no vision. Congrats.
Not having enough money.
The power was so great.
Estos por su parte consideran
to provide guidance to mankind.
Go to michaelwdean.com for more. That's michaelwdean.com. We'll be back for hour two after this trip to the market on Michael Dean After Dark.
Bye for now.
Cling to your guns and your religion, because it's time for Michael Dean After Dark. Clinging to our guns and religion since 2014. I'm not very religious, but I respect anyone's right to cling to their religion.
Yep.
As long as they don't use government guns to point at me and tell me things like, I can't go to the strip club. I don't go to strip clubs, but the fact that they're illegal anywhere, that anyone tries to regulate boobies, just seems ridiculous to me. It seems like somebody who has issues with their own personal sensuality and wants to impose their lack of sensuality on the rest of the world. That's not godly. That's horrible. And people like that should be laughed at and not served in restaurants. That's what I think.
Yep.
Yeah. So, Nikki, you're going to talk about families. Families is the peoples that you hate, as they say in Death Clock. And I don't hate my family, but I don't understand them. I don't talk to them much. I'm a lot younger than most of my family. I was definitely an accident. I was a happy accident. I asked my mother once, was I, you know, because I had a brother in college and two sisters in high school when I was born. My dad was 43 and my mother was 40 when I was born. Mm-hmm. And I asked my mother one time, was I an accident? And she said, she looked real thoughtful and said, you were conceived and raised in love.
Aww.
Which is old-timey kind words for, yes, you were an accident. So,
yeah.
But, you know, they didn't harm me. They were just too busy. I was a latchkey kid. They were too busy running their own businesses, which is a good thing because it taught me to run mine, and that's what I got out of it. But, like, I don't really know my sisters and brothers. They have these real fond memories of me, but it's like they have fond memories of me being, like, three, you know? So I don't really have the fond memories. And, you know, I've talked to you more tonight, Nikki, than I have talked to, you know, all my siblings combined in the past 9 months probably.
Oh, that's unfortunate, but I understand it.
It's not unfortunate. It's no, I mean, and it's great if you have a good relationship with your family, and it's great if other people do, but I don't see it as a requirement for a healthy lifestyle. And a lot of people believe that family is the most important thing in the world, to the point where they will be involved in really toxic relationships with family members. And I don't get that. I think family is what you make it. And if you want it to be the most important thing in the world, I think it should definitely be more important than your relationship with your school or your government, especially. And I do believe that the government in every country wants to take the family out of the equation and become the family for everybody and become, have everyone dependent on them. I mean, you sent me this thing. It was some liberal website.
Yeah, the Daily Cost, right?
Yeah, the other one. The second one you sent me, iacknowledge.net.
Oh, yeah.
iacknowledge.net. And there's one of the articles on it is 10 hilarious examples of what happens when kids are unsupervised. And, you know, sites that are kind of aggregators of lots of other stuff, like Yahoo, they'll always have, like, you know, top 10 celebrities who look better with their makeup off or something like that. You know, it's that kind of article, but it really has a statist undertone to me, because it's basically saying, you know, it shows a bunch of kids in, you know, uncomfortable or hilarious or dangerous situations, like, you know, stuck inside the claw machine smiling, you know, like the kid got in there somehow. But all of these pictures have, you know, government workers, police and firemen, like, getting kids out of these situations. And this kind of thing is pretty rare. And if you supervise your kid, it's non-existent. But it's basically, I see an unwritten thing here of the state needs to be the parents to your kids because you're not doing a good enough job and you're not capable of it.
Yeah, the last incident I heard about a kid getting stuck in a claw machine, the kid had actually, a three-year-old, left the home and walked two blocks down the street to the bar, got in the claw machine, and then when the mother finally realized her kid was gone, went down there, got the kid, but then CPS showed up, wanted to make sure the kid wasn't abused. Turned out he wasn't. Kid went home. Everyone was happy. But at the same time, that mother really should have watched where her kid was going.
Yeah.
So but families. We don't need the we don't need the government for that.
No. So families, what do you think about them? Why do they think what do they think? What do you think families think, Nikki?
I don't know. I think sometimes when with people like us, I hate to say that, but our families just look at us as like we're going through a phase, and they say, "Oh, they'll get over it. They're just rebelling." But I think for 28 years, I've been rebelling. And, you know, my mom just, I don't know. My mom has kind of given in. She's cool with it. But
are you 28 or were you,
no,
you were fine and dandy till you were two or three?
Well, those are the years I don't really remember. So I don't really count them, you know? It's come to a point with my family where we literally, like, politics is off the table, no matter what. We can never ever talk about it. And I hung out with some family today, and to me it was just like busy conversation. How are you doing? Oh, the sports, the weather, the circus, the bread, you know, that sort of stuff.
The circus and the bread, that's funny.
Yeah,
bread and circus,
just, yeah. And I just, it makes me feel like I'm not being true to myself when, oh, so my brother and my father were talking about their IRAs and how to save money on your taxes by shifting money from one account to an IRA. And I was just like, hey, why don't you just go buy gold? And they were just like, ha, 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 ha. Oh, she's doing it again. She's talking about her gold.
Yeah.
So it just, I think we get labeled as crazy.
You know, I don't really have a lot of conversations with people like that. I'm sure there are people listening on radio who think we're crazy, but I guess we forgot to give out the call-in number, so we're not listening to any of them tonight. And I really don't have a lot of interactions with people. I guess I've structured my life in a way to get rid of things I don't like. Like, for instance, I never minded working. I always like working. I prefer to work doing things I like to do, but I never had a problem even doing things I wouldn't do otherwise, you know, like go work in an office or something. But the thing I always hated was getting up early. I'm a night owl.
Yeah.
And some people have internal clocks that are naturally just set to different times. And my natural clock, if I don't have to get up to an alarm, my natural time to wake up is about 10 or 11 in the morning. And that doesn't work for working in an office. So I basically worked for about 10 years at getting to the point where I could work from home. And then I've done that now for 12 years. So for the past 14 years. So for the past 24 years, I've been working towards working at home or working at home. And that's like it. And that was a very conscious decision. It's been a pretty much subconscious or unconscious decision to not have anybody in my life. I don't want to say I don't have anyone in my life that criticizes me, because that sounds like I'm afraid of confrontation. But it's more like I'm bored of the time wasting and energy wasting of useless confrontation. And
yeah,
someone who basically doesn't understand the core principles that make you what you are and want to try to talk you out of it. I mean, it's literally like trying to talk a gay person straight, or trying to talk a straight person gay. Trying to talk a libertarian into being a statist is, it ain't going to happen. It's like trying to talk a woman into being a man, or vice versa. It is not going to happen.
Yeah. And any kind of conversation I have with my dad now has turned into just this straw man argument. I'll say something that I think is quite logical, and he'll just say, you just hate everybody. You hate the government, don't you?
I'd be like,
So I just have learned to not talk about things with them anymore. And if I want to have my family in my life, I do kind of have to sacrifice that a little bit, unfortunately.
Well, I mean, I have ideas of arguments you could give back, but I wouldn't have those arguments. So I don't know if you want to. I mean, I'm curious.
Yeah, go ahead.
I'm curious if you ever point out to him that he's using a straw man and point out what a logical fallacy is.
Yes, I have. What's he say? He just says, it doesn't matter. You just hate the government.
And I'd be like, yeah. Talking politics with my family is really bizarre, because my sisters and my brother are inveterate Obama voters. They are Obama lickers. And see, when my sisters were young, when I was, I grew up during the Vietnam War and had teenage sisters who were anti-war. And so I got that value from them, but I made it my own and internalized it. It's been my longest running core value, you know? And I was anti-gun for a long time, because I didn't realize if you could be pro-gun and anti-war, which is actually the tagline for the Freedom Fiends: anti-war, pro-gun. And, you know, I'm not anti-defense. I'm not even anti-defense on a large scale. I'm just anti what the U.S. and every other government does with their militaries, which is just kill people to make money and have libido dominandi. And it's a really evil thing. So talking with my dad is 93, which is pretty bizarre, because most people don't live to 93 or have a parent who's 93. Yeah. But my dad's 93. And he's not in a home, and he's not senile. He still lives with himself. You know, he has a housekeeper that comes by a couple times a week, and he has a nurse that comes by once or twice a week. But, you know, he drives to like his Rotary meeting every Wednesday, and he drives to the store and does his own shopping, and he can form a complete sentence and a complete thought. But he's very much stuck in what he's been at for a long time, which is, you know, he believes you can restore the Constitution and restore the Republic and just get the right men in there and get out that horrible Obama, and we can get things done and get things right. He believes in, like a first grade level civics class view of politics in America from like 1929, really, when you look at it. And then my sisters are just, they are so into logical fallacies. They won't discuss Obama with me. They know they'll lose. They know. I think they listen to my shows. I've sent a couple. Huh. I've sent links of a couple of them to them, because it was a topic that they had an interest in. But they never discuss it with me.
Yeah, I'm not one to, I don't know, I don't discuss Obama with my family either, because I don't think I'm seasoned enough to know about him.
Yeah, well, I'll discuss, my dad and I will talk about how we love guns and how we hate communism and hate Obama. And, but, you know, then he says he thinks we need good Republicans in there to fix it. And that's where we end. Yeah, we can't talk past that. All right. We'll be back.
You're listening to Michael Dean After Dark, the invigorating alternative to those other late night shows.
This is the regular Sunday night meeting of Statists Anonymous. Those people who used to like the state and used to think it could help them and be their federal family and then got into recovery from statism. At least that's me. Nikki, were you ever a statist?
Oh, yeah.
Tell me.
I wasn't a statist to the point where I believed everything about the government and what they told me. It was more of I was just a sheep following the rules because I didn't want to get in trouble. But I always had like the rebellious thoughts, not of hurting anybody, but just being like, screw this, you know?
Yeah. Yeah, I was a lazy statist. You know, I repeated things and went, bah, and said things like, without the government, who would build the roads? And I wrote a paper in high school about why only the military and the police should have guns. I wish I could find that ridiculous piece of claptrap, but I got an A on it because it was well written, but probably because the teacher believed that. And that's a horrible thought that basically leads to tyranny. So we were talking before the break about families. And we found this article on the Daily Kos, KOS, which is a very liberal site. And it says, it's called, What's Up With These Very Angry Libertarians? Which I immediately say translates as, what's up with these people who don't like being tyrannized? And it says, a close family member posted a paranoid screed on his Facebook yesterday. This person used to be a Democrat until he married his wife and slowly but surely morphed into a rabid, seemingly right-wing libertarian. Reading this irrational rant is at once hysterically funny and scary. But beyond that, it's confounding. Here's what he says. Recently, President Obama warned graduate students about libertarians, saying, they'll warn you the tyranny is lurking just around the corner. You should reject these voices. And the writer says, did Obama really use the word libertarians in his speech? I sincerely doubt it, but that's the jumping off point for what follows. Oh, this is the Daily Kos writer. Yeah, he did say it. I've heard video of it, actually.
Wow.
And the libertarian writes, Mr. Obama, you completely misunderstand. Tyranny's not just around the corner. It's here. When half your earnings are taken from you and used for foolish or harmful purposes, that's already tyranny. When a government tells you how much you can eat or drink or how much you can enjoy yourself, that's already tyranny. When your money is used to fund immoral and unneeded wars. I mean, this is funny because this sounds like all the media I read and listen to. But I guess that what I consider normal news just sounds like lunacy. Let's see. When your money is used to fund immoral and unneeded wars that serve only to enrich crony capitalist corporatists, defense contractors, that's already tyranny. When your children are not allowed to exercise your natural and fundamental, when you are not allowed to exercise your natural and fundamental right to defend yourself or your children, as in the case of a gun-free school zone, that's already tyranny. And then this statist writer goes on to say, it goes on to rail against the unconstitutional duopoly of the two-party system, handouts that are given out by taking other citizens' money unlawfully, and on and on. And this guy says, for the life of me, I'm not sure why people call themselves libertarians and continue to support Ron Paul, which these people do. Yeah, not all of us do. And Ron Paul just wrote an article about why Bitcoin is not money, which is pretty bizarre to me.
I need to read that.
Yeah. I mean, he basically said, you know, there's no reason it should be taxed or regulated, but I don't consider it to have the – he doesn't consider it to be money in the sense that he believes money is money, which is pretty bizarre to me for someone who has always advocated for, you know, unlimited, unregulated competition in currencies. And it pretty much has all the indicators of a money or a currency or both at this point. So this guy goes on and on to there's basically a red herring in this, right, and a straw man, because basically this liberal article assumes that all libertarians Support Ron Paul and his son Rand Paul. Rand Paul is a skunk, man. I like Ron Paul as a philosopher, not as a politician. But Rand Paul is a skunk who, you know, he's probably better on a couple different bullet points than most politicians in what he says. And who knows what he'd do if you're president? But yeah, man, we don't like those people. We don't support those people necessarily.
Yeah, and Ron Paul, I feel like, yeah, he's definitely like our philosopher. He's somebody that helps lead people to the other issues of liberty, which is great. And I met him. He's a wonderful, kind man, and that's how I see him. I don't see him as a rock star or God or anything.
We'll be back with more about how this article says that libertarians are like ineffectual children throwing tantrums and never succeeding in getting what they want on Michael Dean After Dark.
You're listening to Michael Dean After Dark, and yes, we're broadcasting this message into space.
I've heard it said that there are two kinds of people in the world. Those who think there are two kinds of people in the world, and those who know better. But I really believe there are two kinds of people in the world. There are those who don't want to be ruled and don't want rulers. And then there are the other kind who want to rule or be ruled. And people who want to rule or be ruled really hate us people who don't want to be ruled. Some of them are just don't know we exist. Some of them ignore us. But some of them, like this guy that wrote this article in the Daily Kos, think we are mentally ill and need help. They think we're like children throwing temper tantrums. And this guy says his family member who's a libertarian needs a therapist. And he says the irony of all this is that this person was active duty Air Force for 22 years, retired, gets his pension, now works for the civilian as a civilian government employee for the Air Force, racking up a second pension. And that's another one that's really common is, you know, criticizing libertarians. Basically, like, if you're really libertarian, you wouldn't use the roads. I mean, there's varying degrees of it. And I would say that a libertarian who's still working for the Air Force probably has a I think this family member has a valid beef in calling him a hypocrite. But, you know, I've heard like a really common thing is Michael Vandebau, who does the Sipsey Street Irregulars pro-gun blog, who's very feisty and has literally been called out as a threat to the way things are on air on national news by Bill Clinton. So he's a heavy hitter. And, you know, the guy's like 67 years old, and he's criticized by being anti-government and being on Social Security. But the thing is, Social Security is not welfare. You paid into it. I don't really see any problem with being paid out from it.
Exactly. Getting your money back, which we never will, but you can try.
Yeah. So basically what these critics are saying is of people like that who are on Social Security is saying, well, if you love the government, you'll let them keep all the money they took from you and not get it back.
Yeah, well, there's definitely a philosophy of bleeding the beast, and I don't know how you feel about that. I don't even know how I feel about it because I don't do it, but do you know what that is?
Yeah, but go ahead and explain it.
Bleeding the beast, taking everything you can get from the government as a way of protest and hoping that it collapses eventually.
I've heard communist leftists talk about that. Like, I've heard punk rock kids who don't like the government, but they're not like us. They're not libertarian, and they think everyone's wealth should be redistributed, and they're on welfare as a political act. I've heard of that.
Well, I've heard supposedly principled libertarians say that they would do that as well.
Yeah, I think I've heard Ben Stone's daughter, Kai, talk about that at one point. I don't know if she does it or not, but I heard her talk about it as a strategy.
Yeah, so, I don't think she does it either.
I don't think she does either, but I've heard her talk about people who do it on his show. I've heard her talk about people who do it. Yeah, I don't really see it as a strategy. I just don't see it as I don't see taking money the government took from you back. You know, I don't see that as anything wrong. Like, we file income tax begrudgingly, but we file federal income tax. We moved to a state with no state income tax because that's how strongly we feel about it. That was one of the reasons we moved to Wyoming from California, was that, and we like guns. We basically moved here for and we don't like being around a lot of people. You know, the population's much lower here. It's much mellower. There's far less people up in your face all the time, you know, walking outside your house. And also just in your house. Like in California, in L.A. where I lived, and San Francisco where you lived, like your neighbors tend to be more busybody and really care what you're doing in your own home and kind of like peering through their curtains at you kind of thing. And
boredom.
It's not just boredom though, too. It's kind of like this thing of Obama, like keep an eye on, you know, it takes a village to raise your child. And, you know, they're basically volunteering to be the Stasi, to be the secret police spying on everybody. And there's a lot more of that in left leaning places. Hey, we got somebody calling in.
Hey,
on the Skypes.
Yes, I'm here.
Is your name Dean?
Yes, it is.
What's up, man?
Oh, nothing, man. Yeah, I've been dying to call in. I got a day gig, and it's pretty difficult for me to get up, but I happened to wake up tonight, and I figured, well, call in and see what's going on.
So did you set an alarm to call in?
No, I just woke up.
Cool, man. You sound pretty good. What kind of mic setup are you using?
Well, I took your advice. I'm using the Audio-Technica 2005 USB.
Man, that's
good. And I've got the Sony MDR-7506 headphones.
Wow, that's awesome. Yeah, those guys, you know. And that's I like that about Amazon too. Like I get about $1 each time one of those is sold, but it's I would do it anyway. And that's one of the cool things about kind of open sourcing things in the world. Like since Amazon, you know, gives you credit for doing that, like basically I could write to them and say, I'm a talk show host, you should give me, you know, an endorsement for your stuff. But that would take a long time. They might say no. It would involve contracts and lawyers and stuff. And instead, I just tell people to buy the good stuff, and they buy it, and I get about $1 each time one sells. So, you know, it's worth my time blogging about that. But I really, the main goal is not the dollar I get from the 40 of those or so that I've sold over the past year for them, but it's that I want Liberty Media to sound better. And I really hate listening to call-in shows where people call in on cell phones and they sound horrible.
Mm-hmm. Well, no, I was involved in some broadcasting about 8 years ago. Not really broadcasting. We were kind of an early adopter of podcasting.
Oh, what was your podcast?
It was Detroit Jazz Stage.
Cool, man.
We started about 2005, September, ran about 4 years, and then the economy tanked, and that was it. Because I was actually trying to start a business.
Podcasting is not something to do as a business, and it's really to do as a labor of love. And literally, like, I started doing it early on too, like in 2006. I've been talking into a mic several times a week since then, and somehow ended up on radio. It's, you know, partly accident, partly me trying, and partly help from Free Talk Live and GCN. And I still barely make money at it. It's not my job, but it's a full-time job, but I just do it cause I can't not do it. I love podcasting.
Well, for me, you know, it's as much the experience. You know, Detroit's a pretty, top of the line jazz city, probably one of the top five on the planet easily. And we have a lot of great musicians here. And you know, it wasn't just producing the show. I was actually a host, at the get go. But we actually had a sound engineer. We went into a studio, did the recording. He post-produced it. And eventually, I gave up the position of being a co-host. And we brought in a guy named Jim Gallert to he's a part of the public radio scene here in Detroit for about 30 years by that time. And he came in, helped us clean up the show and refine it. But the other things that it helped me do was rub elbows with a lot of people in the city of Detroit, getting in contact with a lot of the media people, some of the public radio, some of the commercial radio, got in touch with people who are running the Detroit International Jazz Festival. All these things played into, it was a great learning experience overall. And even though I never ended up making money, I mean, that was the part of the business that I was trying to build the relationships with the jazz clubs and everything else around the city, and then leverage that relationship and build on it and incorporate them into the show. I mean, we'd take our gear and actually go to a jazz club and record stuff live, and then you know, once a month release the show, you know, do an interview and then music in between. So Cool. Anyway, it was a great experience.
Do you are you going to the Michigan Peace and Liberty Festival this year?
I went to the one last year.
Cool. Did you meet Lou?
Yes.
Lou Sander Fien?
Yes, I met Lou. Yeah. Yeah, in fact, he's a Facebook friend, and I've I actually posted my rig here, my mic and headphones, and posted it at the Freedom Fiends.
Oh, okay. I don't go much on Facebook, but I'll go look right now.
Well, you know, I still do, but it's interesting that you're talking about talking to family, and you know, I don't even talk to family about this stuff anymore.
Yeah, what do you have to say about that?
Me?
Yeah.
They think I'm nuts.
You know, are they like, and what are they? How do they vote, and what do they believe?
They're across the board. Well, actually, they're across the board relative to being a Democrat or Republican.
Yeah.
You know, and you know, in both cases, they both want the state. That's, you know, there's no getting. I can't talk to them anymore, and I just don't.
There you go.
You know, and on top of that, you know, I had a Facebook page where I'd rant and do stuff and talk, and I think you were even a Facebook friend for a second there.
Yeah, I recognize your name.
Yeah, and I trashed that account.
Yeah,
I started
me
a new
too.
One. I only do cats and food and kids and beer and sports. Yep. That's all.
That's
I do
awesome.
Now.
That's all there is in life. That and, you know, and the family that you make too. You know, I mean, I think family is the most important thing in the world. But the family you make, not the family necessarily that you crawled out of. And if the family you crawled out of is the family you want to make, then that's cool. I mean, Nima really loves his mom and dad and is really close with them, and I think that's really cool. And I'm really not close with my family, and I think it's cool too. I'm not adversarial with them. I just don't have much to talk to him about, you know?
Yeah, well, I have plenty to talk to him about, but I just don't talk about that. But I do, when you say, you know, I have three children, one's in middle school, and I have my two sons. I took my two sons with me to the Midwest Peace and Liberty Fest last year, and they had a great time. But they're the ones who I talk to about this stuff, you know, not in a way to, you know, I always preface it with, look, I'm going to talk to you about these things. And for now, you know, at your age, please only be. Let me be the only one you talked about these things. All right, don't talk to school about it. Don't, you know, I'll be the only one that you talk to about it. And you know, taking them to places like the Midwest Peace and Liberty Festival, you know, gives them a chance to actually talk to other people other than me about it. And also like when you talk about, you know, self-help and, you know, Status Anonymous, that place is like, and even talking on this show, it's like, oh, it's such a relief to be able to talk to people and not have to explain yourself.
Yeah,
exactly. And that's what Pork Fest is like. And I really love that a lot of Liberty events are family friendly. It's great.
Yeah, it's a good thing, man. It's a beautiful thing. So what else, Dean?
Well, that's about it. I wanted to test out the mic. I happened to be awake and thought I'd give a call in, and that's it.
I'd say it passed the test with flying colors. I'm always psyched when someone calls in on this. I've done a whole lot of research on mics, and this is the cheapest, best one. I mean, these are like $60. If people want to get one, they can go to michaelwdean.com, and there's a link over on the right sidebar. I mean, it's just plug and play. You just USB it into your computer, use any kind of headphones, and you can get really good sound.
Yep.
And I appreciate you doing it, and I appreciate you calling in. Thank you for your call, Dean.
You're welcome. Had a great time.
Take care, man. Bye.
Take care. Bye.
We'll be back with more. With the final segment tonight of Michael Dean After Dark with Nikki Darling after this trip to the market.
You're listening to Michael Dean After Dark, and I'm speaking directly to you. Yes, you.
Swallowed too much of the state's poison, the Freedom Fiends will hold your hair back while you hurl, and we stick your finger down your throat to get that poison out. So, Nikki,
yes,
in this final segment, talk about this video you just sent me. It's really long, so we're not going to play the whole thing, but it's good and we like it. Tell me about
it. It's a video by WeAreChange.org. It's Obama supporters actually hate Obama's policies.
And it's Luke Radowski hits the streets of New York City, Times Square to be exact, to find out where Obama supporters really stand on his policies. Now, he did this in an underhanded way where the policies were presented to be Romney's, but this was only done to get an honest opinion. The reactions when the truth was uncovered varied, but they were very telling to say the least. And I've watched it a few times, and he presents the policies about war and all this, and people are like, oh, well, I guess I support it because it's Obama. And then he says, nah, I'm just kidding. And they're like, they're shocked.
Yeah, this has actually been done before with Obama and Bush's policies being presented to Obama supporters. And, you know, like, how do you like Obama's policy of blah, 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 blah. And it's completely the opposite of Obama's policy. And the Obama sheep go meh and say they like it. And, you know, I kind of like this kind of activism for a couple reasons. You know, it's, I call it Jay Leno activism. You know, Jay Leno for decades has done this thing called jaywalking, where he goes out on the street and walks up to people and asks them questions that are really funny. Like, you know, one I remember is, and they basically show how stupid people are, and they probably handpick it. They probably, you know, don't use the video, the people who sound smart. They only show probably, that's how you edit stuff. I mean, for a short form TV format. But one I remember is they went out with, you know, pictures that were like 2 feet by a foot and a half, big pictures of various Supreme Court judges, you know, judge this judge, that judge, and like some fairly famous judges. And like nobody could identify any of them. And then they showed them all a picture of Judge Judy, and they all knew who Judge Judy was, you know, the fake TV former judge who basically yells at couples and tells them to quit acting like lunatics. And that's very telling. That's very telling of Americans' involvement in their nation. And there's some libertarian versions of that, and you were describing this one from Luke from We Are Change, and Adam Kokesh does it too. And I really like Adam's stuff when he does that. I don't necessarily like I like his show sometimes when there's someone else on, but I don't generally like talk media that's one person yelling into a microphone. I like to hear some back and forth. And when he's just and he also just has the worst audio, man. He's always in like a big metal room that looks really cool, but doesn't sound cool. And he's using a, you know, condenser mic when he should be using a dynamic mic. And he's out trying to hire someone for $600 a week to do his work for me when, really, I think, or to do his work for him. He really should just, you know, give me a Bitcoin to give him a few hours of consulting, and I could get him so much better in a couple hours. But, I'm not going to contact him and offer him that. And I do know that he's looking to hire somebody, and I'm not interested in working for someone else. I work for me. But anyway, I really like when he goes out on the street, especially when he talks to U.S. military members, because then he gets to pull out the card of that he was a Marine reservist. And and he uses the right words. He says, sir, he says, blah, blah, blah. He says what, you know, what club he was in. I don't know what they call them, brigadiers or troops.
I have no idea.
What Boy Scout troop he was in the Marines. You know, he pulls all that out and talks really like one Marine to another. And he asked Marines that, you know, like he talked to the Marines who were guarding the Federal Reserve building and asked them if they'd taken an oath to honor the Constitution and asked them if they thought that the Federal Reserve was constitutional. And just, he's really good at this kind of stuff. It really, and he does not only do it with Marines, but he's really good at it. And I think that this kind of stuff serves a couple purposes. My wife is saying, like, what's the point of that? You know, that just sounds, you're just poking at stupid people or unenlightened people. And I said, well, for one purpose it has is entertaining libertarians. And the other is, like, I think it gives you possible arguments to use with people who might be swayable to the ideas of liberty. You know?
Yes.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Well, it's been a good night here, and I've really had fun talking with Nikki. It's been good.
Yay!
Meow.
Meow.
Meow is the new worms. Lou came up with that. Worms. Yeah. All right. Take it home, Brother Michael. Tell us what it's all about, Brother Michael. Preach it, Brother Michael. Here goes Brother Michael. Take it, Brother Michael.
This has been Michael Dean After Dark. I hope we've helped calm the hamster in your brain and left you in a better place than where we found you. We'll be here 5 nights a week, same time and channel. In the meantime, go to michaelwdean.com for more. That's michaelwdean.com. Thank you and have a wonderful evening. Good night.